To the Ask Beatty Show. And I hope every week that you actually take in what the Beatles have to say. Namely, that we all go through so many ups and downs in our life. And life today, it is probably more stressful and chaotic than perhaps ever before in recent times. And one of the things that I try to communicate to you every single week is that we do not need to navigate this life on our own. And if you find that you are struggling, whether or not we're talking about mild depression that doesn't seem to go away, you're just not sure what it is all about. Does it have to do with old family of origin issues? Are you still way back in your family when you were a little child and perhaps there was a lot of fighting going on? Perhaps there was abuse of various different kinds, including substance abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, and that you still have not been able, and it's not your fault, to emotionally work through what did and what did not happen in your life. And you're finding that you're walking around and you're just not feeling on top of your game. And it is very difficult for you to be living in the moment and really taking in the joys of today. And you've been struggling and you've been running and you've been taking vitamins and supplements, and yet you're still not in a place where you would really like to be. And it's interfering. It's interfering with your relationships. It's interfering with friendships. It may even be interfering with your job. And what I am telling you, my friends, is that it is not weakness. It is a real, real strength to be able to acknowledge that I need help, and we all need help, whether or not we're talking about financial help or real estate help or money help, so that you don't need to navigate this life journey on your own. Or perhaps it's the anxiety. You're waking up and you're feeling just so anxious. There's this underlying feeling. And again, you don't know what it is about. You think your diet is okay. You're trying to exercise. You're lifting weights. And it is just so important to be able to not stuff the feelings, stuff the worries, stuff the anxieties. And in talking to somebody, and I'm talking about a qualified, competent therapist, and if you've been listening to the Ask Beatty Show for the last over 4 years, in fact, today is the 252nd Ask Beatty Show here on the Progressive Radio Network. So yes, all therapists, they are not the same, but it is so great to be able to get a second opinion and a new perspective on how you might be able to move forward in your life more happily. So don't stop yourself from reaching out. In fact, you know, the irony is that in my practice, and I've been practicing as a psychotherapist and a sex therapist now for over 35 years, and I can hardly believe when I say that. First it was 20 years, now it's over 35 years, is that people, they always seem to wait for the crisis time. And what I'm suggesting is that when there is a little bit of pain that does not seem to be able to go away on its own, that you really give yourself permission. And one of the coin phrases that my colleague and friend Gary Null uses, he talks about intentional ignorance and neglect. So what I am imparting to you, or trying to impart to you, is that you don't need to neglect yourself when that depression, that anxiety, or perhaps you're dealing or not dealing sufficiently with substance abuse issues of various different kinds, whether or not we're talking about prescription medication or over-the-counter medication, because so many of these medications, they can really make us feel a lot worse. So that if you're finding that you're on a roller coaster ride or a merry-go-round ride, and not a fun one, but rides that never seem to stop, where you never seem to be able to really fully live in the moment, I really do hope, I mean, after 242 Ask Beattie shows, I hope that I have convinced you that it is really, really okay to reach out and ask for help. Because, you know, when you're looking at depression statistics in this country, in the United States, the statistics tell us that there are over 60 million adults in the United States who are suffering from clinical depression. And when it comes to anxiety, in fact, anxiety has taken over the number one spot when it comes to mental health issues. Approximately 40 million adults in the United States are suffering from a variety of different kinds of anxiety disorders. And before the show started, I was breathing and meditating. And I want you to know, you know, people, they meet me and they hear me on the radio. They see me on television. They hear me when I'm giving speeches around the country. And they say, oh, my goodness, you're such a natural. You probably have no anxiety or worry about how you are going to come across, how your presentation are going to be. And trust me, my friends, that is absolutely a myth. That I always feel a little bit nervous before I do the shows, but I have this program that I kind of do, that I force myself to do before every show. And that includes talking to staff at the Progressive Radio Network, loosening up, and just sitting at the console and closing my eyes and meditating and doing some positive visualizations and telling myself that it is going to be okay. And these are things that we can all do. So whether or not it's new relationships or presentations or a new job or trying anything new at all, we all have self-doubt. We all have various different kinds of anxieties. And it is always about trying to figure out, what do I need to do to be able to successfully acknowledge and address and, of course, resolve the issues that are actually getting in the way of our lives and our relationships. And by the way, there is a call-in number here, and I encourage all of you to call. You can ask me any questions, any concerns that you might have. And the call-in number is 888-874-4888. Or what about the sexual issues? You don't have any sex drive, assuming that you are in a relationship. So you have to kind of look at, is it the depression that is getting in the way of your drive, or the anxiety, or perhaps you and your partner, you are not doing well. You are angry. You are upset about the relationship. And certainly I can attest as a woman that the majority of women, if you are angry and upset and disappointed with your partner, the last thing that we are going to want to do is jump into bed and have sex. So what that means is, doesn't mean that you should stop thinking about sex or having sex, but that you need to deal with whatever issues in your relationship are causing you pain or causing you anger, causing you disappointments. And this is why my mantra, and I want this to be your mantra as well, is to not be reluctant, even though it's sometimes really difficult, to acknowledge, not just to yourself, but to people in your life who you need to have some honest, real discussions with, to be able to acknowledge and address and resolve. And if we don't acknowledge and if we don't address, we are never going to get to a place where there is going to be resolution. So in our relationships, whether we're talking about our partners or whether or not we're talking about being single, and we are so frustrated that we are not at this point connecting, either connecting with anybody or connecting with people who we would like to connect with. And again, it's about being introspective. It's very, very easy to blame the world. And I hear this all the time. Living in New York City, there are no good men in New York City. And I hear this from women on a continual basis. And of course, there are plenty of really good men in New York City and in other places around the world. So that if you are struggling with the whole issue of relationships, it really begins looking at oneself and seeing what it is about you that where you perhaps have skeletons in your closet or some unfinished business that is getting in the way of your being able to connect with other people. And we always seem to be on the phone. I was taking the subway from the Upper West Side to the studio and just looking around at people. And it seems to me in the old days, people would say hello and there would be a lot of eye contact. Now everybody is on their phones and on their computers. And I feel it really does get in the way, and we have to find a much, much, much better way of finding a balance between the work, the phones, the computers. And I know for me, at 9 o'clock at night, the phone goes into another room. And if somebody needs to contact me, hopefully there's not going to be a patient emergency. If there is, my patients know that there's a special way that they can contact me, that there is a beginning of the day and an ending of the day where you can enjoy life. You can enjoy your environment. You can enjoy your family. You can enjoy your partner. And if you do not have a partner, then you can find ways, really good ways, to be able to reach out and try and connect with people. And I'm not just talking about computer connection and Twitter connection, because I'm finding that even though it seems to be a way that most people are initially at least connecting or trying to connect with one another, it's so easy to hide behind the computer and all the technology without saying, hey, you know, we've been tweeting, we've been emailing for a while. How about meeting for a cup of herbal tea, at least to make the technology relationship something that is actually real. But again, this is a decision. These are decisions that you have to choose about what you are going to do if you are struggling with different areas in your life. Because time moves on, my friends. And unless we are serious, unless we are willing to acknowledge, address, and resolve issues, miracles just don't quite happen on their own. It's about the efforts and it is about the action that we put into our life that will really, really determine how well or how badly we are going to do, and that we don't need to do this on our own. There is a quick exercise that I want to give you, Actually, I think I'm not going to do the exercise right now because I have a guest. And before I introduce the guest, I want to just tell you what I was reading in January. It was a Sunday, and I was reading the New York Times, and there was a headline, "Do You Take This Robot?" And I remember saying to Jim, my husband, "What is this all about?" So the story was about a man in Japan who had actually just married, had a wedding with a robot that he had made himself. And I remember sitting there and thinking, what is going on here? And as I was doing my research, I've been reading that we appear, and my guest is going to be telling us much more about emerging trends in this area. But in the article, it said that we live in an era when rapid advances in robotics and artificial intelligence, yes, robotics and artificial intelligence, are colliding with an expanding conception of sexual identity. And this apparently comes quickly on the heels of growing worldwide acceptance of gay, trans, and bisexual people. So what does this mean? In real life, pioneers of human-android romance now have a name, digisexuals, which some academics and futurists have suggested constitute an emergent sexual identity. So I'm reading the articles, and I'm trying to really wrap my arms around all of this, and then I see a name, and the name is Dr. MacArthur, Dr. Neil MacArthur. And as I'm reading about Dr. MacArthur, I learned that he is a professor of philosophy at the University of Manitoba. Well, I happen to have grown up in Winnipeg. My undergraduate degree was at the University of Manitoba. So I said to myself, I absolutely have to call Dr. MacArthur and find out what this is all about. So welcome, Dr. MacArthur.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me on.
Well, absolutely. First of all, the first thing I really want to ask you is, how cold is it in Winnipeg today?
It's all of a sudden sort of reasonable, actually. It is right at freezing, and there's a slim possibility that summer might actually arrive one day.
Oh, my heavens. I remember as a kid, it was 40 below zero, and nobody really complained about the weather as we do today. So listen, what is going on? And I think for the audience, let's start with some definitions. First of all, what is digisexuality?
So digisexuality, we use the term kind of in two senses. First of all, we just use it to describe the use of advanced technologies for sexual purposes. And then we also more specifically talk about digisexuals, who are people who see their own sexual identity as essentially linked to technology, and who don't actually see the need necessarily for human partners at all.
Let me ask you this. I mean, putting on my psychotherapy, sex therapy hat, I mean, do you not feel that these are people who tend, for a variety of different reasons, to feel completely disconnected, isolated from other humans, and for some reason have given up that they are going to have this human connection and have found, and for me, this is no judgment, an alternative way to connect, but that it began as a result of their not being able to connect with other human beings?
I think in some cases that's true. I think that, again, I would say that without judgment as well. I think that we already don't panic when we see people who just choose to be single. And we also don't necessarily panic when people choose to have, non-sexual companionate relationships, or who are very close to their pets and see those as their primary companions. So I think people can have, all kinds of different connections and lack of connections and still be quite happy. I also think that these are technologies that people are also starting, it should be said, to integrate into their relationships with other humans as well.
Do you see that happening, though, that people are integrating these other alternatives into their relationships? I mean, we have sex toys. I mean, that's kind of old news, sex toys and a variety of different kinds of other gadgets. But are you saying that the robots are now going to become a part of, or more of an emerging part of people's relationships?
Yes, and first of all, I think it's important, too, because when we talk about second-wave technologies, we call them second-wave technologies, and what we basically mean right now are robots and also virtual worlds where people can go in and interact with artificial agents, and they sometimes have feedback machines hooked up to themselves in various ways to get sensations from their interactions. And so I think those kinds of technologies are in many ways similar to what we've already had. But the reason we call them second wave is because I think they're also very distinct in the kind of experience they provide, the kind of intensity and immersivity, and just in kind of what they do to your brain. If you look at the research, the way people interact in virtual worlds or the way that they relate to artificial agents like robots, it's just very different from the way they would to other kinds of technologies and other kinds of objects. And so I think we're, sort of embarking on a big experiment right now. And I think we don't know what it's going to look like.
And do you actually believe and see with your research that this is becoming more of an emerging trend?
So I think so. I think that it's very hard right now for a couple reasons. First of all, because a lot of the technology is only just coming online or really doesn't exist yet at all. I mean, sex robots, people say, oh, there are sex robots. There aren't, actually. There are no real sex robots. There's dolls that kind of make a few noises. But in terms of what we really talk about as sex robots, they're not here yet. Virtual reality is coming a little faster, actually. But so one thing, because these technologies aren't either in existence, aren't very widespread, there aren't that many people who've had access to them yet. And the people who have, there's a lot of sort of stigma and embarrassment. And so when that New York Times article was being written, actually, we tried to get some of the people that we've talked to about these issues to actually talk to the reporter, and none of them would. No one would talk to the reporter. The reporter was very frustrated because no one would talk to him because they all felt just too embarrassed to be out in public about this.
Well, I was actually trying to reach the man in Japan who married, which is, what the initial New York Times article was about, and I didn't have any luck, and I'm not sure that he would have talked to me. And I remember in the article, his parents, of course, refused to come to the wedding. But it seems that many people, from what I'm gathering, will find that their experiences with this technology becomes integral to their sexual identity. Now, what exactly does that mean, that it's going to become integral to their sexual identity and not just a toy or an adjunct to their relationship and to their sex life?
So I think the easiest analogy to work with when we talk about this idea is, for instance, a BDSM or kink. So there are lots of people who experiment with kink. They integrate kink into their relationships. They do all kinds of things like that. But then there's a kink community, and there are people who really identify as kinky. And that is, if you ask them what their sexual identity is, that is what they'll say it is. And so I think this is very similar. These are technologies that anybody can experiment with and use in various ways. And then there are just some people who are beginning to say, no, this is really part of who I am.
Why and how do you think this is all happening right now?
Well, the technology, I think that, first of all, technology has just all of a sudden become so much part of our lives that I think there's a generation of people right now, we call them digital natives, who just don't think there's anything weird about, first of all, having technology be such a part of your life, and second, using it for sex and for relationships. I mean, they've grown up now, there's people who've had their whole adult lives, there's been internet dating and internet porn and everything else. So I think technology just seems to be taken for granted as part of relationships for a lot of people in the new generation. And I think that a lot of people, even who are older, are starting to discover the potentialities and are already sort of realizing that they can't go back.
So what is actually happening in terms of people building and designing robots with whom people will be able to talk to and ask things, to? Where is that right now? Because you say that at the moment there's nothing happening.
Yeah, it's slow. It is very slow, and it's not specific to sex robots. I mean, robotics right now are very focused on various industrial applications and so on, where you don't care what the robots look like. In terms of making robots look like humans, it's really hard. It's really hard to get a robot to walk, for instance. that the human leg proves to be an amazingly complex piece of technology. Artificial intelligence, if you've tried talking to Siri about anything important or substantial, you know how frustrating that can be.
Yes.
And that's the state of the art right now. Apple has billions of dollars they're spending on this. Nobody in the sex robot industry has that kind of money and that kind of expertise. So they're way behind. So that is not moving as honestly as quickly as even I thought it would. I think there's going to be some big leaps, and I don't think it will be all that long. I think that when you look at virtual reality, though, I think that's one where actually things are moving very quickly and, you know, quite exciting.
You know, I sometimes wonder what would have happened if technology hadn't emerged in the way it had. Do you not think that people would have been more inclined to just maybe try harder to, again, not a judgment, but try harder to connect with other human beings?
I don't know. One of the things I actually have to admit that, I'm not a therapist. I work, my writing partner, Marky Twist, is a therapist, uh-huh. And she works with a lot of people who have issues around technology and technology attachment. You know, a lot of the problems we're seeing are around actually the social aspects of technology, the social media that's creating anxiety. And, you know, I think that there are lots of challenges with technology. And I think that you're right, in many cases, these technologies are technologies that are used by people who feel cut off. But, you know, there's a lot of people who are cut off through no fault of their own. They may be living in a small town where, you know, they may be gay or lesbian, and they may be in a small town where there are no gays and lesbians, or they may be living in a mining camp or who knows where. Or they may just have had a history, for instance, of sexual trauma that makes it very difficult for them to connect with human partners. So I think there's lots of ways in which this technology can actually help isolated people and maybe even transition them to a more kind of social relationship based life.
It's interesting. Yesterday I was at the gym and I was just asking random people at the gym what they thought about this, because I was telling them about the show. And what I found were the younger people, they were really open to all of this. In fact, one young man, 19-year-old art student, he was saying, yes, and look at the special needs community. And what if there are people who, for a variety of reasons, are simply not able to connect with other human beings, and how terrific this is. And yet with some of the older people, it was like, oh my goodness, you've got to be kidding. Look at what is happening to this world. And it actually helped me look at this in a much more balanced way. I mean, I find with patients in my private practice, of course, everybody is on the computer, and if they're single, they're on all of the dating sites, and they're struggling. I mean, my intro, for my show today, I was talking about how so many women will say there are no good men in New York at all, despite the fact there are millions of people here and people are on the dating sites, and yet there seems to be a real hesitation, Dr. MacArthur, for people to meet in the flesh. They'll be sexting, they'll be texting, sometimes for weeks and months. And for reasons, maybe they're shy, maybe they're embarrassed, maybe they don't want to look at the reality of the relationship, they prefer to remain in the digital world rather than actually go out and have a cup of coffee.
I agree with that. So the one thing that you just said that I really loved is this idea of balance, and that you've got some people who are excited about this, some people are worried, and that maybe the truth is somewhere in between. And I think that's 100% right. So I often take the role of kind of a booster, because I think people often come at this from a kind of panic perspective.
Right.
And I sort of have to say, no, let's not panic. But at the same time, I don't think it's a one-way bet. I think that there's lots of reasons to be concerned, and I think you've really well articulated some of them. So you're right. In the world that we live in, this could be a factor as well.
Tell me, how did you even begin to be interested in and research all of this? I was really curious about that. Your background is in philosophy. So how did this happen for you?
Well, you know, it's funny. First of all, I teach a course on sexuality at my at my class at my university on sexual ethics, mm-hmm. and I sort of try to just listen to what my students are talking about and are kind of worried about. And I think that one of the things that's happening is they are just watching so many TV shows and movies now where this kind of technology is a part of their lives, and they want to talk about, oh, did you see what happened on Westworld? Did you see what happened on this? Or, you know, video games. And it's just become so much part of the conversation. And just from kind of listening to that conversation, I sort of thought, you know what? Maybe we should think about this, because this is happening.
Uh-huh. And what do the students say? I mean, are they embracing this? Is it just curiosity? Are they disappointed in their human current face-to-face relationships? I mean, what are their feelings and thoughts about this whole new emerging trend of digisexuality? Is this your term that you defined?
Yeah. Myself and Marky Twist, my writing partner, came up with that. Don't ask me which one of us did. There was a late night conversation in Hawaii where this was the end result.
Uh-huh.
So, I think my students are excited about technology in all its perspectives. They really think technology is great. They haven't realized, I think, what they're in for as far as the social world and the dating world. They're all still in university. They've got people surrounding them all over the place.
Right.
They don't know what it's like for the rest of us who are out there in the world of work and you know, normal life. So they're not really, they don't have the same kinds of concerns that we might have about the dating world, which I totally, everything you said totally registers with me as well. I mean, if it makes you feel better, it's not just New York. Winnipeg is the same way. We're all feeling pretty cut off and hopeless. Well, not all of us, but we all have those moments. So you know, they're excited. I think I try to again bring them some perspective on it, and I think that there's probably a balance in between. But I think, you know, again, this generation, there's just no going back for them. Technology will always be a part of their life, and they just take it for granted.
You know, you talk about people feeling, you know, so cut off. I mean, I remember when I was a first year student at the University of Manitoba, there may have been 300 or 400 students in an introductory class. We talked, we walked, whether it was hot or whether it was cold outside, we interacted, we dated. So, I mean, are you saying that, you know, even in Winnipeg, which is, you know, a lovely, the way I remember it, you know, very traditional, close-knit kind of a community, you're saying that the kids are feeling more and more cut off?
Many of them are. I mean, you know, but again, I think it's the social media more than anything, is my view, is that they're all sitting at home playing video games. They're all trying to connect. But, you know, they're at home connecting, and they don't know how to do it in real life anymore.
So don't you think, then, that that is one of our jobs? I certainly see that as part of what I do as a therapist, to get people to get out. And believe it or not, I'm even role-playing with people who have multiple degrees, who are very successful, you know, in their professional uh-huh. lives, and actually preparing them for an initial face-to-face meeting with somebody because they don't feel that they have the words, they don't feel that they have the confidence because of the tweets and because of the texts. I mean, people hardly communicate anymore in sentences. People hardly have the kinds of conversations that we are having on a face-to-face basis.
I think that's true. I mean, you know, there was an Atlantic article where the woman who was writing it said that she met her husband on an elevator, and her friends all say, oh, I'd love to meet someone on an elevator. That would be so romantic. And then she asked, what would you do if someone talked to you on an elevator? They said, oh, I'd freak out. I'd never talk to a stranger on an elevator.
See, this is the thing. This is exactly the thing. What's actually happened to very nice, natural connection, meetings, and interactions?
Yeah, I think technology has stepped in. But I think we need to integrate it. I would look at these kinds of technologies, these robots or whatever they're going to be. That's kind of like, for most people, they're going to be kind of like a dessert. You know, you don't eat cake every day. You don't eat it all the time. it's something that you have kind of as part of your diet as a kind of reasonable treat for you. And I would hope that for most people, this is not going to lead to the end of human connection. But I think there's lots of reasons to be concerned too. And I think that we really do. I mean, I think that people like you who are just talking about this stuff and bringing it forward as a something to worry about, I think that's just so important.
Well, you know, when I posted this interview on Facebook last week, I mean, you should have seen what the response was. I mean, just people were speechless. They could hardly believe this. Some of my colleagues around the country said, you know, good for you for doing this. We've never heard about this. We're going to listen to the show. You know, what is digisexuality? And in the last week, I mean, I've literally been going around asking people who I know and also random strangers, you know, what they think about all of this. And as I say, the younger people, they paused and seemed to be much more open. And initially, to be perfectly honest with you, I kind of freaked out when I read the article in the New York Times. And then I calmed down and I said, look, you know, who are we to judge, what people are going to feel comfortable with and feel connected to? And, you know, as you say, you know, whether it's our animals, whether it's land, whether it's music, that we have to be a lot more open and less judgmental. And at the same time, as you were saying, to try to create a balance and see how this is all going to play out. And yet what I see is that people are spending much more time in their houses and in their apartments and on their computers and cell phones and seem to be really interacting on a face-to-face basis less and less. And as a therapist, that really does worry me. There just seems to be a fear, an avoidance. It would be easy to say a laziness, but maybe not a laziness, but that there's just less and less human face-to-face interaction occurring. And so many of the people that work at the radio station here, you know, I was asking them, and they're acknowledging that it's just easier to be on your phone and on your computer rather than going out and saying hello and maybe having a human connection. And maybe that human connection can lead to a human relationship and a human sexual relationship as well. Hello? Oh, no. I think I lost him. Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that we actually lost Dr. MacArthur, and I hope that we are going to find Dr. MacArthur. He is at the University of Winnipeg. He is a professor of philosophy and who has been doing amazing, amazing research in this whole area of digisexuality. And for those of you who are tuning in right now, the New York Times recently reported that more and more people are finding fulfilling. And I guess I would like to talk to the people about how fulfilling these relationships are. Fulfilling emotional and sexual relationships with robots and other forms of technology. And if that's what turns you on, if that's the way you want to live your life, then so be it. So
it turns out technology's not perfect. I guess you lost me.
No, I know. Yes, that's exactly true. We have two engineers here, so right, technology is definitely...
We lost our human connection even as we spoke about it.
Well, I would love to have the human connection with you. And in fact, I was talking to my daughter yesterday, and we were reminiscing about Jeannie's Cakes, and she wanted to know whether Jeannie's Bakery was still there. And you know about Jeannie's Bakery, don't you?
I think it's still there. We've got an awful lot of bakeries here now, though. There's a lot of competition.
Oh, well, Jeannie's Cake is about 40 or 50 years old. The best cake you could find anywhere. But that is totally, totally an aside. So, in terms of people actually building, designing, you know, robots that are going to be able to, I guess, talk to us or respond to us? Is that the correct terminology? Respond?
I would say interact, connect. I think that where they depart from the current technologies is where they can actually interact with us in an autonomous way. They don't just respond to what we say, but they actually have some personality.
And I'll tell you something really cute that some of the women that I spoke with, they said, well, okay, if the men are going to have their dolls, their female robot dolls who are going to be doing whatever it is that these men want emotionally, sexually, we hope that there are going to be male robots especially for so many women who, for a variety of reasons, do not have partners, do not want partners, but who may very well want to have some type of a sexual connection, a sexual relationship with something. So hopefully male robots are also going to be in the making.
Well, and I think women stand to gain quite a lot, because honestly, I think that men have not always been able to quite figure out what's the best way to make women happy in an intimate situation. So I think you may find that there are a lot of robots that are designed around women's needs, and they may not even look, I mean, some of them may look like Jude Law from AI, but or Brad Pitt or whoever, but some of them may not even look quite human. There's a woman in London, Kate Devlin, who's designing robots, who has a annual session where she has people come in and offer different designs for robots, specifically with, female desire in mind. And she comes up with some really interesting ideas.
So this is where we are going, right?
Well, it's coming whether we like it or not. So I would say we should be ready. We should understand it. We should be able to not panic, and we should be able to understand the people who are using it. And I think we should be able to figure out a way to make it part of our lives in a healthy way. Because I think it could be healthy or it could be unhealthy, depending on how we react and how we're prepared. And so my view is, let's be prepared and let's do this in a healthy way.
If we choose to do it, right?
Yes, if we choose. I think the train is leaving the station, so we need to figure that out pretty quick.
I think you're absolutely right. So but my fear and my initial overreaction has definitely subsided, and really just reading what you've written and listening to some of the interviews that you've done, it really helped to balance me out and balance my perspective out as well. So I thank you for that. So listen, maybe one of these days I'll be up in Winnipeg and would love to connect with you in a face-to-face fashion, okay?
Well, that would be a lot of fun.
So listen, thank you so, so much, Dr. MacArthur, for coming on the show, and let's keep in touch, okay?
That's terrific. It's been a great pleasure.
Thanks so much, then. Well, everybody, that was Dr. Neil MacArthur, an associate professor of philosophy at the University of Manitoba, who seems to be spending a lot of research in this new and apparently emerging area of digisexuality. And I would so much love to hear from you right now. You've heard the interview. And of course, for people who have not been able to listen to the Ask BD Show live, this will be on the archives, the Ask BD archives on the Progressive Radio Network tomorrow. So here we have it. Digisexuality emerging as a new sexual identity. And it's really, really true. I think it's very easy at face value, because of fears, because of perhaps religious beliefs, to just close ourselves off to new possibilities of looking at connection. I mean, I can be perfectly honest with you. I mean, this would never in a million years be for me, but so be it. I mean, there are people who, for a variety of reasons, have not been able to, may not want to connect with other human beings. And if this is going to provide them with some comfort, with some solace, with some relationship and sexual satisfaction, who are we then to judge other people's choices? So, you know, one of the things that I love to do on the Ask Beatty show is to be able to talk about many, many subjects that we do not typically talk about with friends, with family, sometimes with anybody when it comes to relationships and when it comes to sex. And of course, the reality is, and I hear this all the time, is that we are not doing all that well when it comes to our sex lives and when also when it comes to our relationships. And I look at the statistics. I look at the marital statistics, and for first marriages, the divorce rate is 48%. And for second marriages, it's 62%. For third marriages, it's 73%. In the United States, couples have sex approximately twice a month, and sometimes a little less than twice a month as compared to France, where people have sex at least twice a week. So there's something that's really not working all that well for us. And I think that, of course, we have to look inward and figure out what it is that we are doing or not doing that is contributing to some of the issues and problems that we are having in our lives. And I have found, too, that sex is something that is still very, very difficult for couples to talk about, for people to talk about. You know, and I joke about this all the time, that in my entire adult life, never once has a physician, a gynecologist, a primary care doctor ever said to me, ever asked me, Beatty, how is your sex life? Are things going well in your relationship? And, you know, I'm very fortunate. I have a great marriage. I have a really good sex life with my husband, Jim. And we have been able, fortunately, to be able to talk about issues that arise in our relationship. And this is the thing that I encourage couples to do all the time, whether or not we're talking about sex, whether we're talking about money or children or in-laws or where are we going to go or where are we going to live. It's just so important to be able to find the words and find the way and find the time to be able to communicate well. And I think that communication and problem-solving skills, these are things that most people typically don't do very well. And when you think about it, where do we learn? Where do we learn about communication? Where do we learn about how to problem-solve? And this is the thing. When it comes to relationships, when it comes to sex, and when it comes to communication and problem solving, we really, really are. We're left to our own devices to try to figure this out on our own. And from what I can see, and when I look at statistics, marriage statistics, sex statistics, we really are not doing all that well. So that when we're up against hurdles in our lives, when we find that certain things are just not happening, that we are not living the kinds of lives that we hope to live or that we would like to live, this is where I encourage you, I really encourage you to reach out and find somebody, a good, competent therapist who can help you gain some new perspective, who can help you emotionally work through some of the wounds, some of the pain from your past, from your present, so that you are finally, finally then able to really live in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And there are things, and, you know, I say this to you every single week, but I think it's important. This is an important reminder that there are things that we know that we can do every single day that will definitely help us to improve the quality of our lives, the quality of our relationships, the quality of our physical and our mental health as well. You know, things like plant-based diets. Gary Null talks about this every single day. And I wonder how many of you, of course, people who listen to his show and people who listen to all the shows on the Progressive Radio Network, I am hoping that after all these years that you have actually taken this in and that you will not be guilty of intentional ignorance and neglect. And the importance of sleep, the importance of exercise, including weight training and yoga and transcendental meditation, and of course, having supportive people in our lives, how important that is. And to eliminate, and yes, I use the term eliminate, toxic people and toxins that if we allow it, they will kill us. And to add things into our life like dancing and music and positive visualizations and aromatherapy and essential oils. And one of the greatest things that I have found in my life as a psychotherapist and a sex therapist is being able to help others. And I sometimes think that I have gotten just as much, if not more, over all these years from being able to help others. And I've treated thousands of people over the past 35 years. And that has certainly been something that has been very, very helpful to me personally as well as professionally. And things like massage and acupuncture and taking a bath and just getting away from all the technology and the stress and the work and the texting and the sexting and just chilling out and enjoying the sky and nature and taking a walk. And many, many people, they love to journal. And one of the things that is so important for all of us is to be able to express our feelings and not keep things inside, the pain, the anger, the disappointment, the love, and being able to tell people in our lives that I love you and I appreciate you and I am so happy that you are in my life. And, you know, I wonder, you know, at work, do you tell your colleagues, and hopefully you have really supportive colleagues and a good boss who is very supportive of you in all kinds of ways. Do you tell people, thank you so much for being a part of my life. I appreciate, I am grateful. All of these things, they really, really matter in terms of our life and in terms of the quality of the life that we all wish to live. And other things that we can eliminate, including, of course, toxins and toxic people, things like sugar and soda and alcohol and nicotine. And I've been having a challenge of completely eliminating coffee, but, you know, coffee also apparently is not all that healthy for us. And the other thing, too, is the technology, regardless of the fact that we may be in an emerging trend toward digi-sexuality, according to Dr. MacArthur, I think that we really do need to find a way to minimize the social media and the cell phones and the computers and to really just disconnect from all of the technology. It makes such a difference to not be listening for that beep. Is there a message? Is there an email? I know that today before the show, I was expecting a number of messages and it was starting to really, really, really make me a little crazy. You know, just looking to see, was the email received? Did I send the email? Was the email confirmed? So that we do need to find a way to have a much, much better balance between work and our relationships and fun. And this is where I think it's just important to be very, very intentional to take a look at the various different aspects in our lives. And if they are not working for us to come up with a plan, of course, first of all, we have to be honest with ourselves and serious with ourselves to identify the various different things in our lives, the various different areas in our lives, in order to be able to then do a really good assessment and see where we're at and see the various different changes and modifications that we may need to make in order to really improve our lives and our relationships. So everybody, I cannot believe that another hour has come and gone on the Ask Beattie Show. And by the way, I have a voicemail number. If any of you would like to leave me voicemails with questions, that voicemail number is 862-800-6805. 862-800-6805. Again, I want to thank you all so much for listening, for going to the Ask Beattie archives on the Progressive Radio Network. And hopefully you really enjoyed the show and that Dr. MacArthur's conversation with me will give us all some moments to really pause about what is going on in the world. And of course, much more importantly, to think about the kind of world and the kind of life and the kind of relationships that we want for ourselves. And I leave you with my two messages. And the messages are, I want you to do whatever it is that you need to do, including getting some outside help,